This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, June 18th, 2012. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from Circle of Life Hospice, focused on providing compassionate end-of-life care and bereavement support. Services are available in Madison, Carroll, Benton, and Washington counties. Circle of Life Hospice, ask for us by name. More information is available at nwacircleoflife.org. The 14th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series welcomes jazz pianist Aaron Goldberg and trio to Walton Art Center Star Theater on Saturday, June 30th at 8 p.m. This New York City pianist and composer has spent the last 12 years touring with the likes of Wynton Marsalis, the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, and Joshua Redman. Tickets including limited cabaret seating available at 442-5600 or waltonartcenter.org. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a look at mineral rights in Arkansas. Although you may own a parcel of land, you may not own the ground beneath you, which is called the mineral estate. Plus, Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net has an update on the latest business news from around the state, and we preview the penultimate performance in the KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival. But first, according to a new report issued by the Arkansas Department of Workforce Services, Arkansas's unemployment rate rose to 8.1% during the month of May. 1/10 of a percentage point was the difference between May and April, which also reflected the trend seen at the national level. The state's labor force gained 200 people, which was the result of 100 fewer employed and 300 unemployed Arkansans. DWS spokeswoman Kimberly Friedman notes that some job sectors experienced more gains than others.
Looking at non-farm jobs in May as compared to May of last year, actually there was an increase of 6,200 jobs. Five major sectors saw gains, adding 3,700 or more jobs each. Six major industries reported declines. Your leisure and hospitality increased the most with 4,900 additional jobs as compared to May a year ago.
Despite this unemployment increase, there are still over 33,000 more employed Arkansans than in May of 2011. Arkansas has been nationally recognized for its efforts in reducing child hunger in all areas of the state. But despite services that have already been provided, many children and young adults are left hungry during the summer because they depend on school breakfasts and lunches for nutrition. In an effort to address the issue, Governor Mike Beebe founded the Arkansas Summer Food Service Program. Since its inception in 2009, the program has strived to bring food to those who need it. In his weekly radio address, Governor Beebe said the organization has already fed hundreds of thousands of children and will continue to do so this year. Organizers of this year's program hope to provide an additional 13,000 kids with free summer meals. More information about the program can be found at the Arkansas Department of Human Services website. The Arkansas Razorbacks continue play in the College World Series in Omaha tonight. Arkansas will meet South Carolina at 8. Both teams won their first game in the tournament on Saturday. The winner of tonight's game will not play again until Thursday. The losing team will play Wednesday. Arkansas and South Carolina played three times during the regular season, and South Carolina won two of those three games. A former Razorback pitcher made his major league debut yesterday in Texas. Dallas Keuchel started the game for the Houston Astros yesterday. He pitched five innings and gave up just one run and earned no decision. He is the sixth former Razorback to make a major league roster this year. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals open a lengthy homestand tonight at Arvis Ballpark in Springdale against Tulsa. Yesterday, the Nats defeated the Springfield Cardinals 4-3 in Missouri. This is Ozarks at Large. If you've purchased a home or parcel of land, the ground beneath you, known as the mineral estate, may be severed, meaning someone else owns it. Lots of property in Arkansas is divided this way. But what are the implications, and how can you find out if you own your mineral estate? Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Christine Bohan, and Chief Deputy Circuit Clerk for the Carroll County Western District, opens a heavy old book of records titled Mining Claims.
And this book is from 1896 to 1899. The exclusive right to hold prospect and mine upon the following described land in the Western District of Carroll County.
These turn of the 20th century speculators were looking to likely cash in on zinc and lead surface deposits, back then big business on the northwestern Ozarks Plateau. But with the companies long defunct and the individuals long dead, do the subsurface rights go back to the current property owner? The answer is no. So how do we find out if we in fact own the ground beneath our house, our farm, our forest? This is where we get to peer down the rabbit hole.
Usually, it's not done because it's an expensive process.
Charles Morgan of Dunn, Nutter & Morgan, based in Texarkana, Texas, represents both the oil and gas industry as well as individuals in real estate law. He's the top expert in his field. He says the only way to determine if you own your mineral rights is to search the history of your parcel's legal activities, the property abstract.
To build an abstract that goes all the way back to the late 1880s, 1890s, and that's usually when we see some of our first mineral reservations or mineral conveyances can be back that far. But starting back that far to build an abstract may cost a landowner several thousand dollars.
But Morgan said oil and gas companies who prospect for lucrative mineral estates pay lots of money to so-called landmen.
And sometimes some landmen will work backwards. There's two ways to do it, and you just have to be careful that you catch all the instruments. But all of the deeds and all the mortgages are going to be filed of record in the office of the circuit clerk in each county.
You can also check the county tax assessor's office on forfeiture of mineral estates.
If the surface gets forfeited, anybody can bid it in by being the high bidder. But if you're dealing with forfeited minerals, only the surface owner gets to pay, and all he's got to pay is the taxes, penalty, and interest.
But again, most owners are not even aware of their mineral rights. If you live in a mineral-rich area of the state, that could be a real financial liability. The Arkansas River Valley, a century ago, was mined for coal and iron. Eastward are igneous rock deposits of clays and bauxite. And in South Arkansas Gulf Coastal region, we have gypsum, chalk, lignite, or brown coal, as well as oil and gas, and mineral-rich brines, an export product. The ancient interior highlands also have mineral deposits of very high commercial interest. Mike Howard with the Arkansas Geological Survey.
Iron, manganese, antimony, mercury, quartz crystal, barite, novaculite, triple E, coal, natural gas, slate, shale.
Today, the state's massive shale formation, which stretches across 13 north central counties, long considered trash rock, is a very valuable mineral estate because it's rich in methane. The natural gas is extracted using slick water hydraulic fracturing or fracking after a vertical bore is drilled and cased with as many as 8 horizontal bores extending around it. Millions of gallons of pressurized water mixed with sand and tons of lubricating chemicals are shot through to crack the rock, releasing the methane. Southwestern Energy, an Australian holding company, BHP Billiton, which bought out Chesapeake Energy and PetroHawk's assets several years ago, are the main operators. And according to a new report on the economic impact of the Fayetteville Shale, more than $18.5 billion was generated over 3 years, beginning in 2008. In industry spending and jobs. State geologist Mike Howard.
Fayetteville Shale in Arkansas is the hot site for developmental drilling now. But as far as exploratory drilling and looking, there are other basins, shale basins off on the East Coast that are the hot site for leasing at the present time. It's a cyclical thing.
A cash bonus precedes a mineral lease transaction with net proceeds after expenses paid in royalties. Gross proceeds are best to negotiate, says mineral rights expert Charles Morgan. Such leaseholders may also have a say on where rigs and pipes and roads are sited. But if you don't own the mineral rights, you may end up with an extraction operation right next to your house.
In other words, when you bought that land, if you didn't get the minerals, then you sort of lose control or don't have any control over what happens on your land. The surface estate, the fellow, he is said to be subservient to the mineral estate.
And what about if you own the mineral rights on a productive shale gas unit and your neighbors have signed leases, but you don't want your land disturbed? By law, the gas industry can make you sign a lease called forced integration. Arkansas is one of 39 states that allows landholders to be forced integrated, which industry says is critical to productivity. Still, business has been really good for many working poor residential mineral estate owners. According to a recent study, $1.2 billion in mineral lease payments were paid out in recent years, but not all residents want to participate. Take Johnson County resident Barry Peltz. He purchased a small farm near Ludwig some years ago.
We bought our land in, I believe it was 1993, and we did not have any notion that the drilling would come to our front door. And one day we were there, and a man come with a clipboard and a gold chain around his neck and flashing his teeth, and it was like I'd won the lottery. He said, "We're going to put a gas well out there in your hay meadow." And I pretty much seen him packing. I didn't know who he was or what he was trying to do. And from that point on, it's been just kind of a downhill sort of thing.
Peltz is an independent HVAC refrigeration contractor. But when he was younger, he worked as a conventional gas driller in both eastern Oklahoma and western Arkansas, so understood what was coming. He did not own the mineral rights. A local church does, so he had little say in the venture. There are now 7 conventional gas wells in his neighborhood. Barry Peltz also owns 7 acres of land north of Lamar, where he initially lived. There he owns the mineral rights, but there he was forced integrated, compelled by a gas company to lease his land for a conventional gas well because a majority of his neighbors had done so. Peltz refused. His land was condemned.
And the interesting thing about that part is for the smaller landowner, you're better off not signing the lease because when you're integrated, you'll receive the maximum amount paid anybody in that section. So you'll receive the the same amount of money as the larger landowners. So you're better off not signing anything and just letting them condemn your land.
At first he was lowballed, followed by several higher offers, but that soon ended, he said, when the State Oil and Gas Commission told him to settle on a lower price.
They run interference and they pave the way for these companies to come in and take what they want, leave what they want, and do as they please.
Including, he said, a huge waste pit filled with debris and chemicals dug in his front yard on his Ludwig property. The gas well has since been plugged, but he fully expects the gas industry to return someday to frack it. And that's why advocates like Joyce Hale with the League of Women Voters has pushed the state legislature to pass a landholder's bill of rights.
The contracts are complex, and many of the people sign before they really understand what all of the problems are. It is made to look like it's going to be a very simple process, and as soon as they have gotten involved, they find out that they have been misled on many of the conditions that they're going to be living under and the financial risks that their property is going to suffer based on lost property value.
And for those who do not own the mineral estate beneath their property?
If you don't own mineral rights, you aren't even at the table of conversation as to what is going to be done in the development of that land. A Bill of Rights is necessary for landowners just to have the common courtesy of knowing what is going to be happening and having at least the opportunity to try to live around it. When people come onto their property unannounced, and there is just this a sense of violation that many of the people suffer from the superiority position that the companies have, their development rights supersede anything that has to do with the surface. But there's also problems of making sure that there is not the takings of the loss of economic value out of that land. There needs to be a very clear understanding of how the cleanup operation is going to leave the property, to make sure that companies are bonded well enough so that if there are damages, that the companies are responsible to take care of this. There are just so many things that even though the individual does not own the minerals, they have to live with this condition. And as just pure courtesy they need to be able to have a fully informed situation.
A landholder's Bill of Rights was introduced in the last Arkansas legislative session, but was voted down in committee. Political advocate Joyce Hale says Arkansas property law is a split estate. That term traces back to English monarchs, who sought to maintain mineral ownership by severing and dominating wealth-providing resources, leaving the peasants only a crust of land on which to subsist. So she and members of the Arkansas Public Policy Panel plan to reintroduce a new landholders' rights bill next legislative session. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Links associated with this story can be found at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. The 2010 healthcare law made several sweeping changes, but one recent ruling by the Obama administration requires better insurance policies offered by colleges and universities. Among the changes, the policy cap for student health insurance is now set at $100,000. This is good and bad news for students. Ozarks at Large's John Schlois visited Mary Alice Serafini and Pam Delaney at the Pat Walker Health Center to sort out the changes.
New rules issued by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services have put pressure on some colleges and universities that offer student health insurance. A March ruling by the department actually requires a minimum payment cap or policy limit of at least $100,000 a year. The University of Arkansas in Fayetteville offers student health insurance, and the premiums for the students are actually going up. The new premiums will cost 25% more this year than compared to last year's program. The total cost for Plan 1, which has a deductible of $250, is $1,334 for the academic year. Plan 2 is only $906 for students, but comes with a $2,000 deductible. Mary Alice Serafini, the director of the Pat Walker Health Center, said these changes will actually cost students more, but the coverage will be a lot better.
The plan going up to $1,334 is a big jump. 25% is a big jump for anybody. However, the benefits are so much better. The savings to students is just going to be unbelievable with the unlimited services on outpatient and pharmacy. So my feeling is that the students are getting the best deal they've ever gotten.
Pam Delaney, the student insurance representative, explained some of these benefits.
Things we had negotiated in the last 2 years was a higher outpatient benefit. Instead of $2,000 or $3,000, we had gotten it up to $5,000, and that was pretty adequate. But with health care reform, it is now an unlimited, up to the amount of the policy, it's an unlimited benefit, just no cap of $5,000 anymore. This can be seeing a specialist, going to the emergency room, having an MRI, CAT scan, physical therapy. There's a lot of things that fall under miscellaneous outpatient. You're not in a hospital. You're not admitted. You're an outpatient.
Delaney said a big advantage of the new plan is the prescription drug coverage.
That is really the most significant thing I can see that would have an impact on some students whose medication may be $300 to $500 a month, they would have full benefit with this on their pharmacy.
Whereas the old plan had a limit of $1,250 for prescription drugs, the new plan has no limit. Delaney said the new plan will particularly benefit students with chronic illnesses, such as those with diabetes.
Students that have diabetes, currently they're able to get their diabetic supplies under this policy. It's not considered a pharmacy item, but it is supplies, and they get them at Walmart, and it is covered under the student insurance plan.
Students can get their prescription drugs at any Walmart pharmacy in the United States. The copay is $15 for a generic and $30 for a brand name drug. The university receives bids from health insurance companies and then negotiates a contract with the company they select. Serafini said they originally anticipated a 10% increase in this year's premiums compared to last year's. When the Department of Health and Human Services came out with their new rules in March, Serafini renegotiated the school's contract so the school could be in compliance with the new rules. Several groups, including colleges, are waiting to see how the U.S. Supreme Court will rule on the 2010 healthcare law. Serafini said the university's insurance would continue to have the same coverage regardless of the court's decision. According to a study by the U.S. Government Accountability Office in 2008, about 80% of college students aged 18 to 23 were insured in 2006. Of those, about 67% had health insurance through an employer-sponsored plan, which would be like one they'd get through a parent. About 7% of the group surveyed in 2006 got their insurance through individual or group plans, which include college student insurance plans. Pam Delaney said about 1,600 students opted for the university's student insurance last year. International students attending the university are required to have health insurance. Delaney said that she thought there would be more students, including international ones, opting for the university's student health insurance plan this year.
I think we're going to be picking up a larger enrollment this year just because of health care reform. It's going to have more people are looking at different ways to insure. And we might pick up a few more international students. Some of the plans that students were able to waive with in the past really don't meet all the requirements of the federal government for the new health care reform.
Students already pay a health fee, which covers visits with health professionals, medical evaluations, and psychological services at the Pat Walker Health Center on Garland. The fee for the fall semester is $7.25 per credit hour. According to the university, this is an increase of 14 cents from the previous academic year. A student enrolled in 15 hours of classes this fall would pay about $109 for the upcoming fall semester for their health fee. With the 2010 healthcare law, insurers are now required to allow a student on a parent's plan until the student turns 26. Depending on the employer, Serafini said it might be more expensive for a student to remain on the parent's plan.
We are actually talking with parents now to take a look at the plans that now that they can keep their student on the plan until age 26, how much of a financial burden is that for them, and would it be more strategic for them to enroll in the student health insurance plan? And we don't know the outcome of that. Now, we do know that some students are opting for student health insurance voluntarily because their parent plan would be too expensive.
For all the details about the university's student insurance, including the costs and coverage, visit health.uark.edu/insurance. For Ozarks at Large, I'm John Schlois.
I'm Roby Brock with your Talk Business Update, a recap of the biggest business and political headlines of the last week. Jonesboro prosecutor Scott Ellington eked out a runoff victory in the 1st District Democratic congressional runoff after a late run of lower Delta counties by Representative Clark Hall. In the 4th Congressional District Democratic runoff, May 22nd frontrunner Senator Gene Jeffress cruised to an easy victory with nearly 60% of the vote over Hot Springs attorney Q. Byram Hurst. Ellington faces Republican Congressman Rick Crawford in November, while Jeffress will challenge GOP nominee Tom Cotton. Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel announced Wednesday he'll seek the governor's office in 2014. The announcement makes McDaniel the first high-profile candidate to formally enter the race. McDaniel, who will run as a Democrat, made the announcement in conjunction with filing articles of incorporation for a gubernatorial campaign. Former gas company executive Sheffield Nelson said his plan to raise Arkansas' severance tax to 7% will make the ballot and will not scare off natural gas drillers. To back up his claim, Nelson rolled out economist Dr. Charles Venus, who said that the added cost to natural gas companies from a higher severance tax would amount to less than one day's profit per year for the firms. Nelson also said that his effort is on track to turn in more than 62,500 voter signatures on July 6th to qualify for the November ballot. Arkansas Best Corporation out of Fort Smith purchased Panther Expedited Services in a $180 million deal that Arkansas Best officials say will help them better tap the $700 billion transportation and logistics market. The company also said it would add to its bottom line as early as the third quarter. Panther is owned by New York City-based Fenway Partners. Arkansas Children's Hospital opened a new $121 million wing that will ultimately add 100 new medical professionals to the hospital staff. The pediatric hospital's south wing adds 54 inpatient beds to the campus, as well as new emergency, cardiovascular, and neonatal units to the hospital. On the jobs front, Goodwill Industries of Arkansas announced a major expansion of its operations on Tuesday, taking over a factory facility in southwest Little Rock. Officials said the expansion would create about 50 new jobs, and 50 additional positions are expected to be created through new store openings in 2012. A closed StarTech call center in Jonesboro will reopen, bringing back 250 jobs. That'll happen later this year. The company closed its doors in April, leaving 223 employees without work. And Experience Management in Van Buren revealed that that call center location will add close to 100 new jobs later this year also. A supervisor at the Experian call center said about 450 are now employed at the location in Van Buren, with a little more than 500 expected to be on staff by early fall. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, June 18th, 2012. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So much fun for a Monday.
Yes?
We can go to the Rogers Public Library at 2 for Monday Movie Mania. It's Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Oh, I remember that movie.
We can go to the Fayetteville Public Library at 6:30 for Family Music with Leonardo.
Okay.
And if you missed that, there's another show at 10:30 tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can go to the Walton Arts Center for English Perspectives, one of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra performances featuring masterworks by Elgar and Walton. That's at 7 o'clock, and tickets start at $10.
Excellent. So I can have a pretty cheap, entertaining Monday.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Fred Tackett gained fame in the late 1980s as a member of the reformed rock band Little Feat, but has been doing recording session work for decades. In fact, Tackett played on Little Feat albums going back to 1973's Dixie Chicken, also contributing as a songwriter. In between, Tackett has played on sessions from Johnny Rivers to Fleetwood Mac. The Little Rock native, who lives part-time in Eureka Springs, learned music in part as a kid along Little Rock's Ninth Street. Known as The Line, Ninth Street served as the business and entertainment district for the capital city's black community. Tackett even subbed in bands that played along Ninth Street.
It was an all-black scene, and the law in Little Rock at the time was white people couldn't play in the same bands with black people, you know, vice versa and all that. And, of course, I was in a band with two black guys and two white guys, so we just were constantly getting in trouble. So we would go down, and, you know, I'd sort of sneak in the back door, and they'd hide me out.
Fred Tackett gave fellow Little Rock native and Hall High Schooler Robert Palmer his first nightclub gig. Palmer went on to play music in Insect Trust, which was signed to Atlantic Records, and to write about music for the likes of the New York Times, for which he was the newspaper's first full-time rock writer and chief pop critic. Robert Palmer also wrote the book Deep Blues and was a contributing editor at Rolling Stone magazine. Palmer recounts gigging with Fred Tackett at the beginning of his 1995 book, Rock and Roll, An Unruly History, a companion to the PBS series, to which Palmer was also chief advisor. Of Tackett and another peer, Robert Palmer wrote, "They were vastly more experienced than I was, and seldom let me forget it."
We would play like a Les Paul and Mary Ford, like World is Waiting for the Sunrise, and and then we'd switch into a Venture song, and then we might play some, you know, James Brown tune that we knew. You had to just sort of play all the different styles, and he was pointing out how that sort of became rock and roll. It was the trying to make the people in the bar happy, you know. You just kept playing stuff until they, you know, were looking at you with a smile on their face.
Any which way you can, just love me any which way you can.
By the 1970s, Fred Tackett was playing sessions with superstars of the decade, such as fellow Arkansasian Glenn Campbell. Heard here is Campbell with Tackett on guitar with the title song of Clint Eastwood's film, Any Which Way You Can. Tellingly, Fred Tackett also played on three albums by future bandmates Little Feat. The Pulaski Countyan also played on Boz Scaggs' classic 1976 Silk Degrees album. And 1975 was also a good year for Tackett, sessioning on albums by Kris Kristofferson and Bonnie Raitt, Glenn Campbell, and Rod Stewart. Heard here, among others. Little rocker Fred Tackett solidified his reputation in the studio through the 1980s. Perhaps most notably, he appeared on a pair of Bob Dylan's Christian-oriented albums, 1980's Saved and 1981's Shot of Love. But Tackett could be heard throughout the decade with artists as diverse as Dolly Parton, The Carpenters, Ringo Starr, Neil Diamond, Kenny Rogers, Lionel Richie, Tanya Tucker, Bob Seger, Richard Thompson, and the Allman Brothers.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I'll know.
In addition to his duties with Little Feat, Fred Tackett did session work in the 1990s with the band of Bob Dylan's son, the Wallflowers, as well as with such heavy hitters as Clinton Black, Fleetwood Mac, and heard here, Willie Nelson's 1993 Across the Borderline album. 90% of the time, I was playing acoustic guitar. Fred Tackett says it was session work over the years.
You know, it's just a soulful feeling about late at night out there in the woods in Arkansas and by the river and stuff. It's just... It's hard to pinpoint, and I think we captured some of it in the music. There's kind of there's like a little soulful thing going on.
Here is Fred Tackett of Little Rock with Gold Tooth Woman from his 2003 solo album on Hot Tomato Records, In a Town Like This, an album Tackett said was born in the Ozark Mountains.
She'll wear a tight shoe. She'll wear a light dress and catch a bad cold and have a tooth pulled for a tooth of gold. You're a gold tooth woman with the gold tooth blues, cause a gold tooth makes you look old. Gold in the bank is a wonderful thing, and a girl looks nice in a nice gold ring. But honey, take a tip and the tip ain't cold. Your mouth's no place to carry your gold. Sunday morning when you're still in the hay and you want a little love and your sweet man will say, with a look that'll turn your heart's blood cold, woman, that gold tooth makes you look old. You're a gold tooth woman with the gold tooth blues, cause a gold tooth makes you look old. When your man's out of money and he must have a drink, he'll sneak up behind you at the kitchen sink. Before you can holler, I'm telling the truth, he'll bring you with a blackjack and steal your gold tooth. You're a gold tooth woman with a gold tooth blues, cause a gold tooth makes you look old.
Little Rock native Fred Tackett
with Gold Tooth Woman from his 2003 solo album, In a Town Like This. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The penultimate performance in the KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival is scheduled for Thursday evening inside the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on the University of Arkansas campus. Recently, Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellum spoke with Stephen Gates, one of the festival's organizers, along with trumpeter Richard Woolley about the upcoming performance. Stephen began the conversation by explaining that there are not many chamber works for strings and trumpet.
We're doing a piece written for trumpet, piano, and strings. And it's a little bit of an unusual piece. And so our trumpet player, my colleague Richard Woolley in the music department of the University of Arkansas, is the person playing the trumpet and is all ready to talk about this piece.
Well, now we have a cellist here saying it's a bit of an unusual piece. Does the representative of the trumpets agree?
Well, yeah, I would say I'm glad to be here. Yeah, and it is a bit of an unusual piece. It's an important piece in the repertoire, and I did some research getting ready to play it and to talk about it. Of course, you'd like to know what's going on with the piece. And Saint-Saëns was, lived in Paris at the time and was cohorting about with many different types of people. And one of his acquaintances at the time was a man named Emile Limon, and Limon had a chamber music society that he sort of whimsically, I don't know if you know this or not, he whimsically called the society La Trompette.
I did not know that.
It was sort of a joke. I mean, it wasn't because there's a lot of repertoire, chamber music repertoire at that time especially, to be played. So it was sort of a joke. And the society was formed in 1867 by a group of engineering students from the Imperial Military Academy in Paris.
Engineering students.
That's right. And it's not so uncommon, especially in France, but as we all know, in Russia and in the Prussian countries, this tradition of amateur chamber music players. And Stephen's nodding his head because like most, the society started in people's homes, and it was just sort of grew in popularity by these amateur musicians who were actually engineering students, because after all, you couldn't make your living as a musician, right?
Right.
Some would argue that you still can't. So this was started by this group of students, of which Limon was one, and then it continued after they all graduated, became larger and more popular, and started to encompass many of the most popular musicians in Paris at the time, and including people like Saint-Saëns. And he started to not only go to the concerts but actually play in them, and it became less of a sort of informal and more of a formal concert sort of thing in public concert venues away from people's homes. So anyway, back to this piece, the septet in E-flat. Limon had been after Saint-Saëns to actually compose a piece for trumpet for a long time, and it was sort of a big joke. And I have a couple of quotes. At the time, Saint-Saëns would say, "I would rather create a work for a guitar and 13 trombones than write a piece for trumpet and strings," which is pretty crazy, you know.
Right.
That sort of shows Saint-Saëns' attitude toward it. So finally, in 1879, he wrote a piece called Preamble, which actually became the first movement of this piece, and gave it to him as a Christmas present, to Limon as a Christmas present. Turned around in January of 1880 and performed the first movement of the piece. Well, Saint-Saëns went to the concert, and he was just delighted by it. He was so pleased by the mixture of trumpet in that setting that he finished the work.
Despite his earlier reservation about the trumpet.
And in fact, in 1907, he wrote, When I think how much you pestered me to make me produce against my better judgments this piece that I did not want to write and which has become one of my great successes, I never understood why, until he heard it. So he regarded it later as one of his great successes in his whole chamber music repertoire, which is sort of an astonishing compliment.
Well, it is. I was going to say, they're really... This is the first time Rich has played on this series, and one of the reasons is that there isn't a lot of chamber music kicking around for a trumpet with non-brass instruments, let's say. There's wonderful all-brass instruments. I mean, it's great stuff. And there's a lot of 20th century things, of course, that involve trumpet or cello or whatever instrument you might choose to do. But this is one of the few things before the 20th century that I know of that uses trumpet and all these instruments. And so it's a really, in that sense, it's an absolutely unique as well as unusual piece. Yeah.
Given those unusual surroundings, is the music for the trumpet in this piece different than what you might play in other pieces?
Well, from that repertoire, yes and no. I mean, from this time period, yes and no. You have to remember that the valve, as we know it, the thing that causes or enables the trumpet to be chromatic, was invented around 1815. It's very hard to pinpoint a date because of a lot of things, geography. I mean, what was going on in Paris maybe was different in Vienna and was certainly different than in London. And so all of these guys were doing different things. And so what became the standard valve was attributed in Paris in 1815, around 1815, ironically, to the inventor of the saxophone, Adolf Sax, among others, helped develop a guy named Pironet, developed the valve. So Paris was sort of the epicenter, but a lot of other things were going on. This piece is sort of interesting, and I guess it's not surprising. The first movement especially is using the trumpet more in the way that people were used to it being used, more not really playing too much chromatically, more in trumpet calls, you know, that sort of thing that you might hear in a Haydn or a Mozart symphony. Even though we're talking about 1880 and the valve was developed way back in 1815, it took a long time to perfect and get it to be in tune and have a consistent sound. And oh, by the way, develop the technique for the players to be able to even play it.
Yeah, they were not mass-produced after all.
No, not mass-produced. It depended on where you were. The technique had to be developed. The strings were even at this point, strings had been around for a couple hundred years. So the technology, the ability of the players was way beyond that of the trumpet. So even by 1880, you're still talking about something in real terms that was sort of prehistoric.
Well, this sounds great. There's also some Schumann on the card.
Yes, a very well-known piece in this case, the Schumann Piano Quartet. Again, I didn't know the Saint-Saëns was in E-flat. But so we have a whole program of E-flat, so is the Schumann.
Uh-oh. Maybe we should transpose something out.
The Schumann, probably a lot of people will know. It's he wrote three piano trios, violin, cello, and piano, and then this piano quartet, which adds a viola to that, and then a very famous piano quintet, which adds a second violin to the piano quartet. And so this is just one of his, well-known chamber pieces with piano. I mean, he wrote sonatas for violin. He wrote some string quartets. But as far as I know, except for some other more minor pieces, we have the three trios, the piano quartet and the piano quintet. It's a very, very beautiful piece, you know, with just the quirkiness, the really wonderful quirkiness that one associates with Schumann is there. The beautiful tunes are there. The virtuosity in the piano is also there. And it's an awful lot of fun. And I think, although we're within the same century here, I think it's going to pair very nicely with the Saint-Saëns.
Festival organizer Stephen Gates and trumpeter Richard Rooley recently spoke with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about the fifth concert in the KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival. The performance is scheduled for 7:30 Thursday night inside the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on the University of Arkansas campus. The concert is free and open to the public. More information is available at fulbrightsummermusic.uark.edu. And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Time now for a trivia question. Today's winner will get a whole entertainment package. We have two tickets to the Artisphere Festival Orchestra, who is performing at 7 o'clock Friday night at the Walton Art Center, a pair of tickets to any home Naturals game at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale, and a pair of movie passes to any local Malco movie theater. So today's question has to do with a musician. Sir Paul McCartney, who's probably best known for his time as a member of the Beatles, and he went on to have, or has gone on to have, a successful solo career. He turns 70 today. And throughout his career, it's been very successful, and he's won a number of awards. Today, I want to focus on the Grammys. So the question is, how many Grammy Awards has he won, either as in a band or as in or as a solo performer? So all of them added up, how many Grammys has Paul McCartney won? The winner today will be whoever gets it or whoever is the closest. So you can give me a call now at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF. Good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 18th of June, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "Will You Still Need Me? Will You Still Feed Me When I'm 64? Paul McCartney turns 70 today, born in Liverpool, England. It's the birthday of the oil tycoon Henry Clay Folger, New York City, 1857. Started out as a clerk, worked his way up, learned the oil business, became president of Standard Oil in 1911. He loved Shakespeare, studied Shakespeare, married his wife Emily, who shared his enthusiasm for Shakespeare. She once read a Shakespeare play every day consecutively for 37 days straight. They collected Shakespeareana, first folio editions, and they decided to build a Shakespeare library. They looked in Washington, D.C., found a spot on Capitol Hill, and the library opened, the Folger Library, 2 years after Henry Clay Folger died. It's the birthday of the lyricist Sammy Kahn, born Samuel Cohen in New York, 1913. Wrote Three Coins in the Fountain, Love and Marriage, High Hopes. It was on this day, 1940, Winston Churchill gave his finest hour speech. He'd been prime minister for about a month. Nazi Germany had conquered Holland, Belgium, Luxembourg. They'd taken Paris. Britain stood alone against the advancing troops of Hitler. And Churchill addressed the House of Commons about 4 in the afternoon on this day, 1940, talked for about 40 minutes. He concluded with the lines, "Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be free and the life of the world may move forward into broad, sunlit uplands. But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves, that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour." And it's the birthday of Richard Powers, born Evanston, Illinois, 1957, author of 10 novels, including The Gold Bug Variations, The Echo Maker, and his latest novel, Generosity, An Enhancement. Here's a poem for today by Toy Derricott, "Black Boys Play the Classics." The most popular act in Penn Station is the three black kids in ratty sneakers and T-shirts playing two violins and a cello, Brahms. White men in business suits have already dug into their pockets as they pass, and they toss in a dollar or two without stopping. Brown men in work-soiled khakis stand with their mouths open, arms crossed on their bellies, as if they themselves have always wanted to attempt those bars. One white boy, three, sits cross-legged in front of his idols in ecstasy, their slick, dark faces, their thin, wiry arms, who must begin to look like angels. Why does this trembling pull us? A, beneath the surface we are one. B, amazing, I did not think that they could speak this tongue. Black Boys Play the Classics by Toy Derricotte from Tender, published by University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Reputation.com, helping professionals and businesses manage their reputations online, because search results can be the new first impression. Learn more at Reputation.com. And by Goddard College, offering low residency education for adult learners since 1963, now offering both bachelor's and master's degrees in Port Townsend and Seattle, Washington. Learn more at goddard.edu. Produced by Kathy Roach, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Time now for the answer to our trivia question. As Garrison Keillor mentioned, Sir Paul McCartney is turning 70 today, a one-time member of the Beatles, now has a solo career, solo musician. And the question for today was, how many Grammys has Paul McCartney won total, either as a solo musician or with a band? And the answer is 15. I will put the names of all the people who got the correct answer into the ceramic cow and draw a winner, and I will give you a call in just a few minutes. The 62nd Annual Opera in the Ozarks is June 22nd to July 20th at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs. This season's productions include La Boheme, A Little Night Music, and The Magic Flute. Sunday performances will be held at the Arend Art Center in Bentonville on July 1st, 8th, and 15th at 4 p.m. Tickets and more information available at opera.org. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, St. Paul. St. Paul is located in Madison County. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. I will be back along with my co-host, Kyle Kellums. Happy Monday, and I hope your week is off to a great start.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending of wine? If I'd been out till quarter to three, would you lock the door?